Happy birthday.
Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome back, everybody, Garth Brooks included, to Morning Magazine Part 2 for this November 17th, 2022, 10:31 on the clock. You have your host, James, behind the mic, and I am joined by our good friend, Matt Lippert, Wood County Ag Agent, University Extension, Wisconsin. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Good to hear, Matt. Many of our listeners have been listening to us for a while doing this. We have fun with this interview. We kind of just go where the conversation takes us.
Free flowing.
Yes.
Yes.
Is there anything on your mind right now as far as the ag industry, Matt? Well, if you can pick
hopefully
one thing.
Hopefully there's something on my mind.
Yeah, yeah. Right? If you can pick one thing, is there anything you want to make sure that we hit on, do you think it would be good to talk about today?
Well, it's obviously winter outside today, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I expected we'd probably talk about end of farming season and how that's been going.
It's exactly one of the things I wanted to get to.
You know, I don't know for how many meetings, but I got a couple meetings to go over. So
Okay. All right. Well, let's start right there, Matt. This change of season. How does that affect our farmers? How does that affect our farms?
Well, corn is still coming off, not today much because it's not conducive today, but over the weekend and into Monday, actually the busiest days of the year so far at the receiving at the elevators where they're bringing in corn that for storage, most of it has to see a little heat and get dried a little bit. Peak days. Mm. So a little bit of that was anticipation of this weather coming. And I'd say we're over the peak of harvest, but there's probably a third, maybe a quarter of the corn crop out there yet. So and it gets a little fussier now, so it won't dry down more in the field much at this point. And in our heavier soils, it's probably now muddy, and so now we need it to like freeze or the snow to melt. Because it actually will be hard to freeze. Well, it's got to freeze through the snow. So it's probably going to trickle from now on in. But it's been a pretty good season. Pretty good yields. Pretty good prices. I think last time we alluded to there's some marketing issues. This moisture, hopefully, it makes it to the Mississippi River, right? It's not flowing very well. I think our Wisconsin here looks kind of normal, but in the south, the Missouri hasn't been putting out near the water that it normally would, and so that's been causing some marketing issues. But in general, I think farmers have a good season to be thankful for, a good crop, good prices. Outlook for next year is last year we were starting to get really alarmed about fertilizer, a lot of shortages, the supply chain stuff.
And yeah.
That's still out there. They're going to pay a lot for inputs this next year, but actually maybe not quite as much as last year. So a lot of good things happening there.
Very cool. Very interesting to hear. And certainly anytime we can hear something that's in the positive for our farmers, for that industry, that's a win for all of us. That certainly helps all of us. Is there anything unique to this season that could affect next season or you know, that we can even tell right now?
Oh, nationally, certainly. So, into Wisconsin, we have some below normal precipitation, but as you go west, Central Valley in California, Panhandle of Texas, and then I'd call it kind of the wheat belt. So Kansas, Oklahoma, it's been extremely dry, Nebraska. And this little war that's going on in Ukraine, they produce a lot of wheat. And we hear daily that will the Russians let the wheat go? And it's actually kind of interesting. Like Russia had a record wheat crop this last year. But there's a lot of uncertainty there. Well, so a year ago, maybe we're already anticipating this, but the president was on record saying, grow as much wheat as you can. We don't grow a lot of wheat around here. We grow some. And I think we did increase our output a little bit this last year.
Interesting.
I think that's just a thing that's been happening. It's been fitting in rotations a little bit more. But in the high plains, it's really dry. And so this snow, they got snow as well. It's been very beneficial because that crop, I mean, that's a normal concern to be too dry, but it's been really extreme. And I suppose that's related to the Mississippi not having, the Missouri not having as much water. So that's a national concern crop-wise. Otherwise, here, I think our moisture levels are pretty adequate. I think we're okay. We're looking good for the next year.
Take it. You know, I mean, I'll take that. That's a win. Interesting too. I don't know. I don't know how much that's common knowledge to people. Some of the things you just mentioned there and everything that they produce so much wheat out in over in Ukraine, Russia, that that alone I think is worth interest. Is interesting.
I think a lot of people think of Europe as being a wetter green, right?
Yes,
a lot of greenness, but. Just as you go west in the U.S., it gets drier as you get further away from the ocean. That happens in Europe, too. So, you know, there's parts of the former Soviet Union just beyond the Ukraine that are basically desert. They're really arid. Hmm. And they've done some huge irrigation projects, and there's like the Aral Sea that hardly exists anymore because all the water has been used to grow crops or things like that.
Crazy to me to think of that. Yeah, but it, you're absolutely right. Yeah, but
so actually, it's a drier region, much Ukraine. So it gets more similar to like Western Iowa, which is excellent farmland. So enough rain, you know, but borderline to dry. Hmm. And so we know the two countries border each other. So right across the border from Ukraine to Russia, some more major wheat growing regions. Apparently this year, I don't think Ukraine, because they are so distracted, how can they get inputs? Do they have people to drive tractors when they need to be on the front line? I don't even know, imagine how that works. But the Russian crop was a very good crop this year. So
First, it's just interesting to me. And anytime we can learn more about this industry, I think it's great, no matter where in the world it is. But it also, I love things that show how connected we are as a world, you know, and how
Definitely.
Much we lean on each other. It creates empathy. Hopefully it creates a little more just care for your fellow countrymen, you know, your fellow, you know, citizen of the world.
World citizens.
Right.
Good term.
Yeah. Really interesting, Matt. You always bring this good stuff to us. I love it. You said you had some meetings that recently you want to touch on?
I don't know how many people are going to urgently sign up, but
Coming up. Sorry.
Yeah, upcoming. So December 13th, 12, 13, 15, 16, not right here in the county, but we're having they're kind of our crop agronomy updates at the UW. And we get those really well attended because, well, they're interesting, but also because people who are certified crop advisors, which are, there's hundreds of them in the state, they need continuing credits, and so these classes qualify. So we used to do a lot of them here in Marshfield, but it's going more virtual fewer events. So there are in-person events in Green Bay on the 13th of December and La Crosse on the 15th of December. So not too difficult to get there, and $150, and then. You can, for $50, do virtual and get half a day on the 12th, and the same 50 gets you another half day on the 16th. And that covers just such a wide range of agronomy topics. So crops, it covers corn, it covers soybeans, it covers wheat, it covers pastures and forage crops. And so there's that way of breaking out the topics. But they also cover pests, which... Pests are some of them don't move, like a weed is a pest, right? So weed management, plant disease, plant pathology, insects, there's that focus, new crop genetics, and soil fertility. And so, you know, these are old topics, but some of the new spins are like cover crops are really a popular thing now. They do so many things. So it's a crop that's not really grown for an output necessarily. So for livestock, sometimes these cover crops do become forage, like silage or hay-type feeds. But on some farms, we put cover crops that cover the heel of the season. So after the main crop comes off, we plant this other crop, and it's just coming out of the ground within the last month. And it's got roots in the soil, and it's promoting soil life. It's preventing erosion. It's recycling excess nutrients that might enter into our water supply. So a very lot of work being done today on cover crops. And so there'll be cover crop presentations at that as well.
Talking with you, talking with Rachel, other people about cover crops before, learning more and more how important that is to learn about, to know about, especially, obviously, if you're in that industry.
Well, historically, it's been like it hadn't historically been as appreciated as we've come to appreciate it. So a lot of people like, well, we don't want to do another trip in the field. We're busy enough already. We don't want to buy extra seed. You know, we don't want to do all those things. And so part of the sales pitch is to say, well, there's enough value to that, that long run, you'll cover the cost of your seed or your extra trip in the field. You know, it is really a hard sell to farmers. If it's just good for the earth, but it's going to cost you more money, that's a very difficult one. So I think we're getting better at it. A lot of farmers are realizing that it's good for their business as well.
It sounds also like a case-by-case or a farm-by-farm decision. Like, I don't know if I'm more spitting this out there. I'm not saying I know what I'm talking about necessarily.
So it's a farm-by-farm decision. At a government level, our government agencies, Wood County Land Conservation Office, Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, Consumer Protection have these watershed groups where they put money out in the counties to help a watershed. So Mill Creek, which goes from Marshfield to just below Point across Wood and Portage County, is the Mill Creek. There's one called Epic that's in Clark and Marathon County. The EP in there is Eau Plaine. So there's all these watersheds, and so there's money to encourage farmers to do practices. And usually it has to be a practice you haven't already done. So if you're like a really good farmer and you've already been doing like no-till, they're not going to pay you more to implement no-tilling because you're already doing it. But if you haven't been no-tilling and cover cropping, then they might pay you to cover crop.
Is it hard to prove those things? Like if you haven't done it and you're going to start doing it and you know to show that you are that. I mean, showing the people that are going to be signing the checks, if you will, to those kind of things. As far as if there's an incentive to doing no till and you haven't been doing it before and you are, start to do it, showing them that you are.
Well, yeah, I would say that. Well, actually, you know, there's a lot of reporting people don't realize. Farm Service Agency is right next to the new YMCA Center there in, here in Rapids. And most farmers, like during COVID, markets did some really crazy stuff, and the government had had money for farmers to protect them. Well, you had to be participating. And so, you know, there's a strain. You know, farmers are very independent people. There's a strain. It's like, well, we don't have to report to the government, so we won't. But usually it's I mean, they all have to make their own decision. But usually there's enough benefit to participate to so then there are records. You know, you know what you've been doing.
This is just me speaking, not Matt or anything like that. But the longer you and I get to having these discussions and we talk, Matt, the more I learn about farming and farming industry. And I'm very thankful for that. It's a world that I don't know that much about. But it also, the more I learn, I got to be honest, I get a little angry sometimes. Because my whole life, even growing up in Chicago, I was told farmers are the backbone of our country. Most of my generation, most people out there have been raised with that. Yet our government and different things in society don't seem to really line up with that. Don't seem to like, don't put the money where, put our money where our mouth is, basically. And so I hear something like that, and I got to admit it, it gets me a little frustrated and everything, because I have to agree with those farmers. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, it's a little frustrating. You know, this is me talking here.
Politically, you know, different people have gone at this, how to help farmers, and still there's things in the world that are bigger than the U.S. government, actually. So trends, you know, you can blame the government, have they had a hand in it, but you say farmer, you know, farmers are important. That's like saying, well, honeybees are important. But insects are birds, and we know there's decline in all these things. There's fewer birds, there's fewer honeybees, there's fewer farmers.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of people would say, well, that's not good. You know, they are such a value, you know, they do so many things for rural communities. They feed us all. They're good stewards of the land. They have a good work ethic. All these virtues of farmers. We should have more farmers. But just there's just powerful forces that are mechanizing agriculture. And that's not bad, because that's improved the life of the farmers. You know, they this idealized farmer that many of us have in our mind that existed not even during our parents' time, but our grandparents, they never had any vacation ever, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so guess what? A lot of people never signed up for that job.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's not all worse on farms. I'd say the people that are staying in farming are still incredibly hard workers, and they take a lot of risk, and there's not a lot guaranteed for them. But in some ways, we've been making progress that people actually take vacations sometimes.
That's cool. That's good.
Or have better working conditions. So
I appreciate that. That's good. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll come back and have more conversation with our friend Matt Lippert, Wood County Ag Agent with the University Extension, UW Extension, here on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to Morning Magazine here for this November 17th, 2022, 10:50 on the clock. We're speaking with Matt Lippert, Wood County Ag Agent with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Extension, Wood County. Matt, thanks again for being here, and I want to say thank you for always being so, you know, game to jump in on any conversation we have with this stuff. You're a great team player, man. And I say that, obviously, too, because I'm going to go into something that I don't know how you feel about. But
okay.
I'm 45, and while I didn't grow up around farming and everything, I've been around it long enough, and I've been in this state long enough where I feel like I should know better. But I came across a subject, you know, getting ready for this interview that I had never thought about before. And it came from an article, A Healthcare Plan for Agriculture by Agriculture. And immediately, before I even got into the article, it dawns on me, healthcare for the ag industry, healthcare for farmers. Like, I had never really thought much about this, but you know, most of us, we sign, if we're fortunate, we go to a business, to a company that has a health insurance plan or something like that. We have that here at Civic. We have all the, you know, lots of that. But in the farming industry, in the ag industry, you don't have that kind of thing. How does that fall on farmers when it comes to health insurance? And is that something that we should be looking at a little bit stronger, more as a society?
Well, as you say, I didn't get a chance to research the topic.
Yeah, before. Yeah.
But I would strongly suspect, I've probably quite certain say that farmers as a group, it's a valid issue that, you know, if you had a concern that was promoting this, that farmers are probably underinsured or uninsured. The whole group of self-employed people probably fit somewhat in that group. And then the other group would be if you work for a smaller firm, so maybe you're an employee, there's typically less guaranteed benefits that way than if you work for a larger firm. Agriculture isn't unionized. Typically unions would be advocating for insurance.
I think
it's a very valid issue. How does agriculture address that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we thought, oh, things are good on the farm this week, but we still know that farmers as a group, why would they not look out for themselves, and why wouldn't they just get some insurance? Well, a lot of them aren't, they open up their checkbook and they feel they haven't made enough money to do that. So farming, a lot of farmers are not poor people, but they're often cash poor. You know, they need to own this land. They need to be paying on this tractor. And sometimes people think, well, these farmers are rich because I heard that tractor going by is a $100,000 tractor. And actually, it might be a $200,000 tractor. You know, so they got a lot of investment. So actually, probably a very common route for farmers is if they're married, their spouse works off the farm. And That's a very important part of the household is the house, I'm not going to say male or female, which way it is.
Yeah.
Provides the insurance, and they probably also provide the cash to run the household. Mm-hmm. And all the farm stuff keeps on, hopefully it's growing and it's bringing a return, but a lot of that is just consumed by the farm. So obviously that shouldn't be the only way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a valid thing. You know, we are not Canada. We are not Europe, where everyone is guaranteed insurance. And so I think you picked a segment of society that some of the farmers are very well insured, and sometimes it's from off-farm sources. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the farm has figured that out and they're doing it themselves. But I'd say it is a valid issue for farmers.
Yeah. Well, and again, talking about like putting our money where our mouth is kind of thing. We talk about how badly we need farmers, how important they are and everything. And then we kind of drop the ball when it comes to certain things that are very important for a farmers, for anybody in general. Everybody should have health insurance. But I mean, I never would have thought that there'd be something that myself and a farmer would have some parallel, some relationship. But up until recently, most every job I've worked my whole life, I've never had insurance because I couldn't afford it.
You worked for smaller companies.
Yes. Yeah. And that kind of thing.
And they didn't provide it. And
yeah.
You weren't a union job. So
yes.
All those things that I pointed out.
Yeah. And it just speaks to that this is something that we do need to put our eyes on. This is something we talk a lot about healthcare. We talk a lot about people deserving healthcare. Here's another subject or another section of our society we need to focus on.
I just heard a program on men and healthcare, and you know, men don't like to go see the doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, until you know they might. So insurance is involved with going, health insurance is involved with going to see the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this independent strain, that part of the reason people are farmers is that they like to make their own decisions and see the results of their own decisions. And they may get along working with other people, but maybe they don't want to work with a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's some solid. In fact, a colleague of mine at Farm Tech Days, Nancy Vance, did an informal poll this last July, about the stresses of farming. And it was like lack of money, long hours, all these valid things. And people got to vote. Hmm. Well, one of them was solitude.
Hmm. Interesting.
And you know what? Farmers weren't, that was the lowest bean count. Because in general, they signed up for that.
Hmm. Okay.
So some folks maybe miss more interaction, but a lot of them, it's all right to work with the combine or the cows. And fewer people, that's an okay thing.
Which that adds up. That makes sense. But, you know, I'm reminded of something that occurred to me a little before the election kicked off, and a couple Tuesdays ago and everything. I was thinking about this, and we've had so many listeners saying, you know, I'm so sick of these attack ads, and I'm so sick of the way politics is nowadays. It's just a dog fight. Yeah, right? It wasn't even that long ago. It feels like it in some ways because we're so happy to be removed from it.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking, like, what incentive, if I'm a young person, what incentive do I have to get into politics? All I see is somebody go in there and they just get torn to shreds. They just get, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of insight. Well, I'm thinking about in this conversation, leading into this conversation, a very similar thing with the farming industry. We all understand, you hit on it earlier, we need more farmers. What incentive are we giving people to get into this industry, especially when we talk about the healthcare situation and that? And it's one of those family-run businesses that used to be handed down to the next member.
Yeah. And some of them were very successful. And, you know, it's like, oh, farmers are leaving because they're bankrupt. And it's like, many times the farm business was very successful, but the younger generation said, I don't want that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to solve multiple things to keep farmers on the farm. It's not just about, well, if they had more money in their pocketbooks, you know... A lot of them want what they see in town. So I work, my focus within agriculture is dairy. And one very powerful thing that's happening on a lot of dairy farms is robotic milking, robotic calf feeding, robotic, the same company sell all these because they're in robotics. Mm. A machine that goes through and pushes up the feed to the cows because you need to, they push it out of their reach, mm-hmm. and then you got to push it up.
Yeah.
And robots are, well, they're very expensive, and they're very expensive to maintain. So why would we do that? Because people like that if I have a robot on my farm, and now I have teenagers, I might be able to go to their concert or their athletic event because the cows are still being taken care of. Mm. So it's it's interesting because it's considered to be a scale neutral activity that if you have 60 cows, which is below average size today, you could justify a robot. But there's people with 10,000 cows that have dozens of robots.
Yeah.
And why is that? Well, it's hard to find the workers. So robots are a very powerful source in agriculture right now, a very strong move. Have to see how it evolves. But one of the things under that is quality of life for people.
Matt, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
We look forward to next month talking again real soon. Good luck with the meetings and everything. Hope that goes well. And thanks again for the time.
Very good.
We'll be back with more Morning Magazine and plenty more tomorrow right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.